So let's talk about applying faith. We've been, for the last talking about faith itself. All of Paul's epistles have this mixture of doctrine. Romans is a really good example of this. And then they end in kind of a potpourri mixture of practical living. If you notice in the beginning of Romans, he goes through a lot of doctrine. Then he hits about chapter 8 and it goes into applying that doctrine. That seems the way that Paul works. Now, chapter 12 of Hebrews is like that, as it starts off with a doctrinal thing. We've been going through that for the last, 12 weeks, 11 chapters, and it ends with the practical. We won't really see the practical all the way. We're going to see more of it next week. But in other words, we just apply what we learn. That's what it is, so applying what we learn. Today, we're going to look at the book of Hebrews. We have these Jewish Christians that have gone back to the old covenant of the law of Moses. That covenant, I say that we can do something to please God. That's the old covenant. Instead of the new covenant, what Jesus pleased God by his sacrifice. And in chapter 1 through 11, it affirms all those principles. We've talked about it over and over again. Now it's time to take everything that we've read and we studied and put it into a practical day-by-day experience. That's what he wants us to do. Now, what good does it do if you fill your head with all the knowledge of God and these great principles and what God has brought into our lives and not let him sink down into your heart? That's what we want to do today. How about a race? How about running a race? If you could talk about it, you could study it, but you could buy the right shoes for it, right? But if you don't run in it, what's the point? What's the point? A lot of people do that, by the way. They get all dressed up and they don't run. What about the chastening of the Lord? That's a subject that we're going to talk about today, part of it. When it comes into our life, do we ignore it or are we corrected by it? That's the point of chastening, the chastening of God. Doctrine is important, but it's not enough to just know these things. You know, in John 13, Jesus said, if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about everything we've talked about before, but we're going to put it into a working relationship with God. So we're going to look at two things. We're going to look at running the race, the first couple verses, and then we're going to talk about the chastening of the Lord and how that works in our life. According to Hebrews, from 3 to 13, we're going to talk about that. So let's talk about running the race first. Verse 1, it says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. You know, Paul has been, for the first 11 chapters, building up the doctrine of faith, that new covenant of faith versus the old covenant of works. He describes those that went out before us as a great cloud of witnesses. We talked about that last week, about Abraham, about the different witnesses that went before us. He describes those that went before us as that great cloud of witnesses. You know, they're kind of Bible heroes of the past. I call them dead mentors, right? Dead mentors, people that have gone before us that speak to us today. And they left their footprint in the sand of time as examples of people that walked in faith. They walked in faith. You know, I love the book of Daniel. I love Daniel as a believer. I mean, such a good example. Abraham, one of my favorite characters in the Bible. David, amazing, you know, examples that he left. He left us examples of what to do and what not to do even in his life. They made it to the other side. They made it to the other side. They're bruised, they're beat up, they're bandaged, and they have overcome all the tribulation of this life, and they've received the crown of glory. And they did it by The law of Moses? No. They did it by walking in faith. You know, God has encircled us with these Old Testament saints, that great cloud of witnesses. So he says, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which is so easily ensnares us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. You know, we have these two obstacles that Paul talks about here as we run the race that can slow us down. He says weights and then sin, those two obstacles. You know, marathons have become very popular. We have the Chicago, you got the Boston. I think that's one of the top ones, the Boston Marathon. The average run time of a typical runner is about 4 hours, somewhere around 4 hours plus. And it's not unusual when you see the winners of those marathons, you see the Kenyan runners, right? They're all, I mean, the tall, lean Kenyan runners. And that particularly, these runners come out of the Rift Valley in Kenya. And they're, I mean, it's genetics, a lot of it's genetics. Both male and female, great runners. They've done a lot of studies on genetics, the oxygen intake of a person's body, but the most significant factor in these runners are height to weight ratios. That's the big thing. And the Kenyans are very tall and they're thin. Weight is a determinant factor. You know, the lightest clothes, the lightest shoes, their body weight. Did you ever see a marathon runner with a backpack? I don't think so. You know, let's put 50 pounds in our backpack. See if we can make another record. And really, it helped my time, right? Now, it's interesting because Paul separates weight from sin. He does. These weights that are not necessarily sin, but they slow you down. Things that we allow in our life or allow in my life that can hinder the race. And it could be some kind of consuming hobby or something that takes away from the race that God has put you in. Could be a liberty that we don't have to exercise. We have liberties in the Lord, but we don't necessarily have to exercise them for different reasons. Set aside the weights that slow your race. And the second thing, though, he talks about is sin. You know, sin is not, liberties are optional. They are. And you can think about that. You can think about what you can allow in your life and what God allows you to allow in your life. And is it slow in your race, though? Is it extra baggage? That's what it is. But sin is not optional. Sin is not optional. Any sin and all sin is going to slow you down. It's going to slow you down in the race. He mentions the sin that easily ensnares us, and we all know about that. We know how sin is sneaky and dark, and it easily catches us. You know, that word ensnares means to thwart the racer that they cannot run the race. That's what it is. It thwarts it, and that's what sin does in our life. You know, we're supposed to set aside both the weight and then the sin, and then we're supposed to run. How fast? How fast should you run? You know, the Kenyans in the marathon, they run about a 5-minute mile. I mean, I could never run a 5-minute mile, you know. You could probably double that for me or something. Maybe even more. I don't know. Probably can't do it anymore. The invitation to the race, listen to this, this is really important. It's not for speed, it's for endurance. It's for endurance. It's the object of the race is not to finish the fastest, the object of the race is to finish. That's what he wants us to do. He wants us to finish the race. When you look at some of the Old Testament saints, we understand that they stumbled along the way. We've seen the sin of Abraham, and we see the sin of David, and you know the other saints of the past that made the mistakes. They weren't always the fastest, but you know what? They finished. They did finish. You know, we need to pace ourselves for the long haul. Paul says to run with endurance, and that word endurance means to be cheerful, to be hopeful and enduring the race, to be cheerful and hopeful and enduring the race. The reminder here is patience, is to be patient with your race, to run the race that is set before you patiently and of good cheer. You know, we have the story of this Fungus Singe, I hope I pronounced his name right, a British citizen who was born in India who ran the Toronto Marathon in 2003. He came in last. He completed the run in 8 hours, 11 minutes, and 59 seconds. However, he was 100 years old. He did. He completed the race. You know, it's sad to say how many people never finish the race. It's really, as a pastor, I got people that are in the ditch and back of me. You know, I'm moving on and I see them and you had a chance to minister to them, to help them and to encourage them, and you see them go off astray. They get distracted because they never set aside the weight and the sin. That's what Paul is encouraging us to hear this morning. And that's the negative of, you know, the weight and the sin is the negative. Paul frames the positive in verse 2. He says, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand at the throne of God. You know, when I was in Bible school, we had a physical fitness class. And unfortunately, I had just recently had come to the Lord in several years of cigarette smoking and other smoking, you might say. But I was not in the best shape. But we had this physical fitness class at Bible school. And I never liked running. I never did. But once a week, we're required to run 3.5 miles. Just one day, 3.5 miles. I remember in the run, if I fixed my eye on the race, it would be grueling. I mean, just, I was dying. It would be grueling. Every step I took was very heavy, very difficult. But if I fixed my mind on the finish line, it became easier. It really did become easier because I just paced myself. I did the best I could in that 3.5 miles. I allowed myself to slow down, okay, to even walk it off, you know, and pick it back up, and just put my eyes on the finish line. And here's the point. Jesus is the finish line. He is the finish line. He is the start. He's the end of the race. He's the bookends of our walk. He's the bookends, the author and the finisher of our faith. He, you know, we set aside the weights and then the sin, and we fix our eyes upon Jesus. We fix our eyes upon Jesus, who has gone before us, and he's won. He's already overcome. I love the book of Revelation where it speaks about Jesus overcoming. And it speaks about us overcoming because we overcome by the blood of the Lamb. That's how we overcome. So we set aside the weights, and then we set aside the sin. You know, the walk of the Christian is a serious business. It's the most serious thing that you're ever going to encounter because it determines your eternity. It determines your eternity. And we set aside those weights, and then we set aside the sin, and then we begin to fix our eyes upon Jesus Christ. These guys, the Hebrew Christians, were setting their eyes upon the Mosaic law to bring about their path of salvation. And it was not working. It was causing all kinds of confusion. It was causing persecution. So he's gone before us. He's won. He's overcome. And it says, for the joy, he endured the cross. You know what the joy was? And Paul has even said that. The joy was us. That's what it was. The joy, the prize of Jesus Christ is us. That's the prize. He's gone before us. He's won. He despised the shame. There was a lot of shame. You know, I'm sure you guys picked up on social media, people criticizing the Christians, criticizing even Charlie Kirk, even making fun of his death. And, you know, we are despised by the world. If you bring a light into the world, they don't like the light. They don't like the light. And one of the reasons Charlie hit so many people's hearts that opposed him is because he exposed the sin in their life. He said, I'm a sinner. I need to come. You're a sinner. You need to come to Christ. And he talked about very specific issues, you know, transgender, homosexual. He talked about drunkenness, adultery, all those different sins that the world is committing. He endured for our sake. He endured for us, for you specifically. Don't think about he endured for the crowd. He endured for you. He endured. I often thought that if I was the only person on earth, I probably would have nailed him to the cross and he would have forgiven me. That's how Jesus thinks, that God thinks. He thinks about you personally. He doesn't think about the congregation so much as you personally. He despised the shame. Nobody likes to be made fun of, but he endured it for our sake. He's already crossed the finish line, and now, what is he? He's seated at the right hand of God, interceding for us. He's the King of Kings. You know, he's coming back soon. He's coming back soon. And he's going to set his foot on the Mount of Olives, going to split in two. He's going to get rid of the Antichrist, and he's going to get rid of the beast, and he's going to get rid of Satan, and he's going to put all that, lock that all up, and he's going to reign on earth for 1,000 years. And it's going to be amazing that he's going to bring his saints back with him, because we're going to get raptured before all that. So think about that. Interceding for us that we can run the race by the grace of God. You run by the, you know, the gas that you use for running, it's the grace of God. It is the grace of God. It's kind of interesting. He turns a corner here too, and I think it's personal to these Hebrew Christians, but he's speaking to us today about chastening of the Lord. For consider him who endured such a hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. So we set aside, right? We set aside the weights and the sin, and then we turn our eyes, right, on the Lord. And now he's saying, now you need to consider. You need to consider Jesus. And consider just means to think or meditate upon him. And he says to contemplate on Jesus, lest you become weary and discouraged in your soul. I want to put all this into context in the book itself, but what Paul is speaking about here, and give you a little perspective. The Mosaic Law and the Old Covenant puts your eyes on yourself, on what you can do for God. That's what the whole law is all about, what you can do for God. What I must do for God by my efforts to please him. The New Covenant focuses on what God has done for you. He's done for you what you could never do for yourself. Let me tell you what happens if you focus on yourself. And I've seen it go both ways. People that get legalistic, one of the first things, if you put your eyes on yourself, you tend to be critical of others. It's almost normal that I see this. People that just focuses, I'm gonna pull up my bootstraps by myself. I'm gonna do it. I can make it. And I've seen that very thing match up with criticism of other people. He's not doing enough. She's not reading her Bible enough. She's not praying enough. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. Let me tell you what happens if you focus on yourself. The first thing is that you become critical of others, and legalists always pick on others. They never learn to love one another, and that's a fact, but they love to judge people. They love to judge people. It's when you go inward. You see, I look at it, if I'm going to compare myself to anything, let me compare myself to God and how far I fall short of the glory of God. I have no room at all to boast. Now, I can boast. I have a good job. I have this. I have that. And I look at another guy and girl, and I got room, right? But put yourself on comparing yourself to God, and you'll see how far short you fall. So these two things that happen when you put your eyes on yourself is, one, you become a judger of men. The other way, though, it goes is that you become a judger of yourself. And this could be just as bad. You will always consider the failures of your life, the regrets of your life, how you don't measure up, how you fall short of God's expectation, and we do, but this is in a different way. You go inward. Man, you go inward, and if you're honest with yourself, you're going to realize that you do fall short of the glory of God. But you pick on yourself. You pick on yourself, and you don't look to see what the grace of God has done for you in your life. We're free from sin. I could say that with my whole heart. You're free from sin. You're free from the condemnation of God if you know the Lord. If you are born again of the Spirit, there's nothing against you ever. If God is for us, who can be against us? But people that go down the rule of legalism or the Mosaic law or comparing ourselves to others, they will always consider the failures and the regrets in your own life. Now, the book of Hebrews is a contrast between insufficient works, that would be us, and the perfect satisfaction of Jesus Christ to God, right? The perfect satisfaction. Everything was done perfect. The difference between the old covenant of man trying to please God and the new covenant in whom the Father has said, in my Son, I am well pleased. That's the difference. That's the difference. Now, in verse 5, Paul turns a corner here. He begins to talk about the chastening of the Lord. Let me just read this. It's beginning in verse 5. And you have you forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons? My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are being rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. So keeping our eyes on Jesus protects us in a couple ways. It keeps us walking in the Spirit, right? You focus on the Lord. You don't focus on yourself. You don't focus on other things, but you focus on the Lord and you walk in the Spirit. And then the second thing is when you are chastened by God, you keep a godly perspective on what that chastening is. Now, if you're legalistic, when you're corrected, that correction becomes guilt. And there's a big difference between guilt and correction. And a big difference between not knowing the Lord and being sons of and daughters of the Most High. Part of the problem of these Hebrews is that this epistle is addressing the Jewish Christians. And now it's not just persecution. There's something going on in the group that he's addressing this epistle to. And it has to do, they're being chastened in some way. Now, if you live under the law of Moses and you're being chastened, you're checking, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? Now, we do experience trouble from the outside. Don't you agree? I mean, we've seen it this week. But there's also this internal trouble with God attempting to correct us, correct our thinking, our behavior. In this case, he's trying to, God is trying to correct their behavior, get their minds off the law of Moses and onto the new covenant. And it applies in our life too, is that, there's times where we need to get our eyes off ourselves and put our eyes on Jesus Christ. There's this internal trouble with God attempting to correct our thinking, our behavior. Sometimes trials are internal. They're internal. Something in your life that God is dealing with, something that you might be the only one that knows about it, but it's internal. And that's often the chastening of the Lord. I've been chastened, I don't know, I can't even count. I'll be honest. I've been chastened by the Lord, and it's kind of rough. It doesn't feel good. you know? And especially, I think it even feels worse knowing getting chastened by the Lord than getting chastened by the world or something like that. It's just different. But the chastening of the Lord, or the correction of the Lord, you know, we need to consider some of our trials are as growing our faith. That's what it is. When he corrects us, we grow in the faith. External circumstances, you know, we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing, and yet we still hit that resistance. But we also must consider that sometimes we just shoot ourselves in the foot. You guys agree with that? You shoot yourself in the foot, you do something, you blow it. Everybody blows it. We're all sinners. In our relationship with the Lord, as his father to a son, or a father to a son or daughter, we must consider that God is going to correct us. I don't think any one of us are perfect. I know none of us are perfect. You got to consider that somewhere along the way, God's going to correct us. And sometimes, I know in my own case, sometimes he uses the rod. He does, you know, it stings. But to be clear, there's a vast difference between punishment and chastening. And I think as we set our eyes upon Jesus, we'd be able to discern between the difference there. I don't feel guilt if God is chastening me, because I know he's just correcting me. He knows that I blew it. I know that I blew it. And he's working it out with us. He's working it out in our lives. So punishment is getting your due. You know, realize Christians that are born again have no due. They have no due. And I speak about the long race. We're forgiven. We're forgiven. But there's this difference between punishment, which is getting our due, and chastening, which is correcting our way. That's it. We need to recognize that. We need to keep that in perspective. So how do you deal with chastening? Verse 5 says, don't despise it. Don't despise it. Don't let it get to you. Don't hate it. Matter of fact, you know, verse 5 says, don't despise it, don't loathe it. But he says that we're not to be discouraged by the chastening that God brings into our life. We're not to be discouraged by it. I think a lot of times I'm discouraged because I know that I failed, right? I know that I failed. And he's telling us, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Correct it. He says that we're not to be discouraged by it. Matter of fact, chastening is a sign that God loves you and you belong to him. That's important to understand that. It's really important. And if we keep our eyes on Jesus, all these things will fit right into place. And in all these verses, there's this encouragement to endure the correction of our Heavenly Father. Now, he's addressing a specific group, but this pertains to all of us. All of us have fallen short of the glory of God. All of us have sinned. All of us have blown it. All of us have been chastened by the Lord. But it's not guilt. It's different. It's different. And so if we don't get mixed up between punishment with chastening, he goes a little further in verse 9. He says, furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us, which seemed to be best to them, but he for our own profit. It's for our profit that he chastens us, that we may be partakers of his holiness. You know, and chastening can come in a lot of forms. Anyone with kids knows what works with one kid doesn't work with the other. We had three kids. All of them we had to deal with differently. God deals with all of us differently. Some kids are the strong-willed type, and some are just more compliant. So chastening can be a mixed bag according to who you are and what God is dealing with in your life. And this is all universal with God's correction. He knows exactly what you need. He knows exactly who you are. He knows you better than you. And he will apply that chastening in such a way to bring about the results of bringing you into the holiness of God. That's what he's saying here. So whenever God chastens or corrects you, it's always for your benefit. Now, no chastening, verse 11, seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Now, just because corrections is sent to us by a loving Father's hand does not mean it doesn't sting. I have felt it in my own life. I don't know, everybody's a little different. I sometimes feel more of the sting that comes from God than from anything from the external that happens. In all of this, though, we need to consider Jesus. And looking in verse 12 and 13, therefore strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight the path for your feet, so that the lame may not be dislocated, but rather be healed. So just let me have this freedom. Quit feeling sorry for yourself, right? Quit feeling sorry. If you're being chastened by God, quit feeling sorry for yourself. Know that it's a good thing. I mean, feeling sorry for yourself is, again, reverting to looking at you, what you are. We need to look to Jesus. I think that you can have a very, and I've experienced this too, you know, he talks about the peaceable fruit of righteousness. I think we can have a very open and healthy relationship with God, with the Lord chastening us, correcting us. He knows what you've done and what you're going to do. And there's nothing hidden from God. I mean, we need to be able to speak to God as that he knows everything, that he understands everything, and to be honest with him. And so in that chastening process, it's a very good thing to have that healthy one-on-one talk with the Lord. Talk to him about the problems that maybe you're having a hard time overcoming. Talk to him about the time you got angry. Man, you know, I did that. And he knows. He already knows. And he wants us to be able to speak to him on those things. He's our Father. So you can have a very open and healthy relationship with God in the chastening process. I think that's really important to understand. Matter of fact, I think that if you've gotten to that point in your life, and I think all of us have at some point or another got to that point, it's a sign of maturity. It's a sign of maturity with the Lord that you agree with God and you're submitting to his corrections. That's all it is. The purpose of chastening is not guilt, it's correction. And it's very good to know the difference. Guilt is on the devil's side. Chastening is on the Lord's side. So we've been talking about applying faith. Just through this chapter, we're going to talk about more next week. We'll finish off the chapter next week. We've got two more studies in the book of Hebrews. But we looked at running the race. And he talked about running the race according to the abilities God has given us. But we're to do it in endurance. We're to finish the race. You're not a sprinter. Walk, right? Walk. Talks about that. It talks about, in the Bible, walking, and then it talks about running. It's a race. And then the chasing of the Lord, to understand that God really does love us, and he cares for us, and even though he's correcting you, and it stings, his love has not changed at all. In our minds, it might have changed, but in Acts 14:22, Paul is speaking about this. He says, we must through much tribulation enter the kingdom of God. There's a lot going on in this world. I want to read a short Spurgeon, A Morning and Evening. You guys ever hear that? Morning and Evening? It's a really good, but this is a really good one. This is, he had the gift of the silver tongue. He just knew exactly how to write things. So Morning and Evening by Charles Spurgeon. It says, God's people have their trials. It was never designed by God when he chose his people that they should not be an untried person. They were chosen in the furnace of affliction. They were never chosen to worldly peace and earthly joy. Freedom from sickness and pains of mortality was never promised them, but when the Lord drew up the Charter of Privileges, he included chastisements among the things that which he should inevitably be heirs. Trials are a part of our lot. They were predestined for us in Christ's last legacy. So surely as the stars are fashioned by his hands and their orbits fixed by them, so surely are our trials allotted to us. He has ordained their season and their place, their intensity and their effect that they shall have upon us. Good men never expect to escape trouble. If they do, they will be disappointed, for none of their predecessors have been without them. Mark the patience of Job. Remember Abraham, for he had his trials. And by faith under them, he became the father of the faithful. Note well the biographies of all the patriarchs, the prophets, the apostles, the martyrs, and you shall discover none of those whom God made vessels of mercy who were not made to pass through the fire of affliction. If I could say anything at the end of this, run the race. Walk the race, run, it doesn't matter. Endure, get through it, finish the race. And not to despise the correction, let us apply faith in our lives. That's maturity, was when you begin to take what you've read, what you've learned, what's in your mind, and begin to apply it in your life. That's applying faith. Amen? You guys want to stand? Worship team, come on up.